Well, we'll move on to the second phase, and I'm going to talk primarily about the stormwater design. It's not often you have an opportunity for a major chunk of your city that had been previously designed under the single pipe design, you know, the combo sewer system, to get a chance to redo it from the ground up. So we really wanted to take advantage of that opportunity, and that was definitely a goal from HAP, that sustainability in all aspects was what they wanted to do. And also, because the city of Portland was fronting a lot of money to do this, they really wanted to push a lot of pilot kind of ideas into the mainstream and really test them out here. Kind of a big, broad scale test, as you'll see in some of the slides. So these are just the bullet things that I'm going to hit on. Oops, wrong one. To answer your question about the grid, so this is a picture of Columbia Villa, and it actually had four roads. They connected it, right, 1, 2, 3, 4. They connected it into the rest of the city. Everything else is on the grid, so it's, you know, really, really connected. All these houses faced inward, and it was a real, you know, a real barrier from a connectivity sense. So you can see this sort of the same vantage point. The new grid is all tied back in. Almost every street now reconnects to the neighborhood around it. So the goal was that you wouldn't actually see a boundary anymore. You'd walk from this neighborhood right in, and you'd never know that you went in, except that the stormwater is going to be your the stormwater design is going to be your indicator for the interim. And so now I'm going to talk about the public streets. We had to build those first, obviously, before anything else could happen. So all the infrastructure involved with the public streets is what I'm going to talk about. And there's two parts that we had to deal with. We had to deal with stormwater treatment and stormwater disposal. And I'll get to the disposal point in a second. First, we'll focus on treatment. So another overhead vantage point. This is where Vanport was. Now it is a sewage treatment plant. PIR is over here. And so this is probably 40 feet below. The site slopes generally about this direction, about 2.5% on average. So it's not a steep site by any means, but it does have a general progression of slope toward the Columbia River up there, Columbia Slough and Columbia River. So because we were trying to reduce traffic speeds, and I think just one more thing. This was really like a racetrack. There was about 100 feet from one side of the intersection to another. It was really fast. I don't think there were really stop signs here or anything. It was not a real safe place to play. So a goal with the street design was to have narrower streets and using curb extensions to facilitate safe pedestrian crossings. Well, that gave us an opportunity to do larger curb extensions, lose a parking stall or two in some places, to accommodate vegetated infiltration basins at the intersections. We call these pocket swales. City of Portland is really incorporating this into the standards now, and you start seeing all these all over the place. Well, these were kind of the first ones of their kind in the city at the time. They have curb spillways, stormwater drains in. I'm sure everyone has seen a version of this recently. And they're public, so they only handle stormwater from the public right away, from the streets.
Josh, did you mention how much we've been able to keep on the site? I think maybe we should start with that. Isn't it 98% of all the stormwater is kept on the site?
And yeah. When we get to the disposal section, that'll actually deal with it. These are just serving as function as treatment and not disposal. And I'll get to that part in a minute. Just another vantage point of the same thing. And so what we had was at every intersection where you'd normally have a catch basin, you had a loss of a parking stall, and we had these these things. Oh, and the soil conditions were such that at the surface it didn't really drain that well. So you couldn't use this to dispose of water because it would, if we just put this in without, and it's, you'll see it actually in another view. Well, there's actually a catch basin in each one that has that allows water to store up 6 inches approximately. So each one has the ability to infiltrate the water quality event, that first flush, the dirty water, but over top, through the catch basin, the higher events. And so here's just a little graphic, water coming in, filtering through. And because the soil shallow, in the shallower, I mean, not very deep, did not drain excessively well, we had to put an under drain in with a perf pipe that would take it to the storm disposal system, which I'll again talk to you about in a minute. Those pocket swales worked pretty well in all these residential areas. This was how the residential areas set up. But this zone here, this Trenton, was our main street, a much denser area. So in those areas, we had to modify the pocket swale into a smaller unit. And we took an off-the-shelf vault, put a tree grate in the lid, and had its own internal overflow. And we tried to plant them, but they really didn't, never really grew anything. It's just not light enough. There's a product, Filterra, that has probably improved on this significantly, and they actually can grow things in them. But for our uses, they did serve as sort of surface sand filters. You can actually look in and see the garbage, and hopefully that will indicate maintenance. but they also, and actually you can see here, a pocket swale just wouldn't have worked with a bus stop. You know, it would have taken up way too much space in the much denser zone. And they also worked well when you had trees, and the excavation near a big tree that you want to save would have been too disturbed to really excavate down for that larger pocket swale. They didn't treat as much area, so I had to use more of them more often to handle the same thing. But what we ended up with was vegetated treatment, or those filter boxes that had all intersections, basically. So the disposal, I know you're waiting on this part. So when we started the project, we could go, okay, the existing system is combined sewer. That's bad. Every time it rains, you get raw sewage running into the Columbia Slough and into the Columbia River. That's bad. So we could look at a traditional pipe system, which is what you have in newer cities, just a pipe designated for stormwater that ends up in the river. That's a lot of piping. It picks up everything. There's, all the houses pick up to it. But Portland's stated goal is to really increase infiltration. And if you attended some of the other sessions earlier, especially the MGH one earlier, where you're really trying to emulate the natural environment, a pipe system is not the natural environment. So we're trying to increase infiltration. Then we looked at an option where we just used dry wells, 30-foot deep manholes that are perforated, and the cities actually use them all over the east side. And what we had was the soil at the surface didn't drain that well, but once you got down 15, 20 feet, you hit a gravel layer that drained great. So dry wells, which would puncture that gravel layer, would do well. But you would need one for every set of treatment planters. Then we looked at just overland flow, just try to put swales everywhere, and then we did an extreme of that with almost no piping, where you kind of have these daylight ditches everywhere. And the problem with these two is you just have too many constraints for parking your car, getting to your house. You have to cross all these little bridges. And in some places where you actually had major channels, it'd be a lot of bridges and big bridges. So they just didn't work with the density goals of the project. So we settled on the treatment pocket swale combined with a dry well approach. And that was much cheaper than the traditional pipe system in our initial cost estimate. And then again, this is just a picture of every time you built the dry well, you had to test it, hook it up to a fire hydrant, and flow it to simulate a heavy rainfall event to make sure that it did work. And pretty much, like, only two or three didn't pass originally. And we either had to install another one or convince the city that, look, it's not that crucial. If it overflows, it'll go to this other one, which does better. So all those dots represent approximately where we ended up with all the public dry wells. They call them sumps, actually. So that's the summary of the on-site, or the public street stormwater. But because that public stormwater system didn't provide laterals to every block, every block had to deal with their own stormwater on-site. And so this is where it gets back to when said and done, the public had almost no runoff to the Columbia Slough. Everything is infiltrated. So that also had to be the goal of the private sites. and just to reiterate, since we went with dry wells on the public side, we were going to go with dry wells on the private side as well. And later I'll talk about the regulations that have to do with dry wells, if you don't know already, with DEQ. So phase one, this first block here is seven blocks that we started with. And we started out with this idea of let's try to be as holistic as possible. Let's try to encourage infiltration anywhere we can. So we came up with this idea in the private alleys, and that was another thing, is every block, every residential block, had a 16-foot wide private alley. They had a 22-foot public utility easement that these alleys went down. And that's where everybody would park and get to their houses. It kept the houses facing outward with porches and things out front and cars in the internal, which provided the low point for our stormwater treatment and disposal. These work pretty well, but they require maintenance. And as you, so the water would drain in, store in a rock zone, and we put an extra layer of sand here to give it additional treatment. It's not really a recommended use of the pervious paving, draining onto it, because you have the bottleneck of the pervious pavement. But for what the area that was draining to it, it has worked. The city has currently not backed this type of design on. It's not in the manual. It's kind of going beyond the manual and getting some leeway and trying some new things. The challenge with it, however, is when you have a slope street, like almost none of the alleys were flat, if you had water drain through the pervious pavement, it would just run to the end and pop out of the ground again. So we had to have the contractor put in like impermeable liners every so often to store the water in cells to keep it from escaping to the end. And at the end, we had an overflow catch basin, which was set slightly higher than the pavers. And then we had this would drain to the sedimentation manhole. The sedimentation manhole would drain to the dry well, again, for final disposal of whatever didn't infiltrate primarily. And all of the houses didn't need treatment for roof runoff, so they would just plug directly into that sedimentation manhole and go to the dry well. The dry wells on this site were overly effective at disposing of stormwater. If we had more land available, we might have tried more surface type infiltration, but it just didn't work with the site constraints. Yeah. That's a manhole, and it's got a 4-foot sump in it. So the pipe coming out of this goes into that, and then there's a turn down. It's just a big trapped thing. It's our last attempt to catch any sediment to keep it out of the dry well. At that point, it's not doing really treatment. It's more doing long-term preventing siltation of the dry well. Where's the dry well? It's just outside of this photo. It's probably right there. It was in pretty close proximity. So on phases 2 and 3, which we did at once, we did phase 1 and then we did phase 2 and 3 back to back. The contractor had a lot of trouble with those pavers. He had to pave the streets. He had to put all the rock trench in, pave the street entirely, then saw cut in and put the pavers in as the last thing. And he couldn't do that until every house on the block, the for sale and the HAP houses, was completed. And it was really, you know, just stretching out completion of this first phase, because any sediment would just run off the site. So the vegetation all had to be established. So it was a real obstacle for the contractor, and not to mention the labor intensity that it required to do all those different things. And this was our first block we did as a pilot to see how it looked, and very quickly it got clogged up and would have to get vacuum swept out because of all the unestablished vegetation. So for all of those reasons, the contractor really was pushing a cheaper alternative for the next two phases, which are those two phases there. So in those, what we did is instead we had these catch basins that now they'd be at low points periodically down the alleys, and surface water would drain to an underground sand filter vault. So we just bought a vault, we filled it with sand, we put an under drain in it. Roof runoff is considered clean, so it would bypass this need for treatment. The water would come in, filter through the sand to an under drain, and go out. And each one had an internal overflow, could store up to like 3-4 feet before it overflowed internally. These obviously are a little bit harder to maintain, and that is a problem with all of these things, is maintenance. And that's why the green approach, I think, is favorable, because it's visible, it's right there. If you got ponding water, you know about it. So these weren't our favorite choice, but with the constraints we had, that's what we went with. And then here's pictures of that. So we had catch basins periodically. And what we also had was we had this double piping system. We had the piping for the roof runoff, which was clean, and piping for surface runoff, which was dirty. So we had to do a lot of pipe trenches that were stacked vertically. And design-wise, it was complicated. But I think the contractor liked that one better. So then the commercial district. How am I doing on time? I have no idea.
I don't know.
What? It's 2 o'clock? Oh, we're plenty of time, I guess. All right. So the commercial district we just talked about earlier. Now the private side of it. So we had Trenton South, Trenton Terrace. These two blocks have yet to be developed. And the new school / Boys and Girls Club. That's more of a traditional site. So we had a little more room to play and do more of the typical vegetated treatment designs. This is Trenton South. We just had water run off the parking lot into this long infiltration swale. Only this bottom portion was level. We had to put a railing in just to keep people from falling in. I didn't think there was a risk, but somebody did. And this is Trenton North, where civil engineers get to be a little creative. We shaped our infiltration pond to look like a fish, and it got built that way. So the runoff from the roof actually daylights through the riprap tail, and the overflow ditch inlet is its fin. I don't know if I have to point that out for everybody. And then one big rock for the eye. Yeah. Trenton Terrace. I think this is supposed to have plants, but for some reason there weren't plants in there. We worked with McDonald, a landscape on this one, and Morossi on a lot of the other projects. I think it was all Morossi, yeah.
Yep.
think that was, I guess I didn't put in the pictures of Rosa Parks, but that had a lot of the same things. The problem there is it's a school, so ponding water in your vegetated facilities is a problem, you know, ponding of any long-term event. So we had to work really hard with that soil media to get it to drain fast enough to the underdrain that would take it to the dry well. And some of them ended up with basically straight sand with turf over it just to alleviate any of that ponding concerns, which is unfortunate. But that's the kind of thing you have to really stress on the contractor about getting that soil to perk correctly before it gets installed. Regulatory process. So obviously we had a lot of challenges here. The infrastructure, especially, it was such a quick design to do this, all the streets. And I only talked about the storm part of it, but the street design itself was a challenge. So we really did this hand in hand with the city of Portland, PDOT, BES, and Water Bureau. And which really helped was Steve Fancher, when he was still at City of Portland, was a real champion of this approach of sustainable stormwater and trying to really push these different things before they had really been used everywhere. So, yeah.
Did you come to conference with some of the larger tree roots?
Yes. Tree roots, we obviously had an arborist involved. And a lot of the excavation that would occur near that, the arborist would be involved. I don't know if you remember, there was a slide where they showed that on the Trenton South that had that guardrail. Well, the whole grade of that parking lot raised about a foot because of an impact on tree roots. So that was a redesign because, the roots were a lot closer to the surface. And so we kind of made a hump to get over that, and it forced a much higher drop between the swale and the parking lot. So there's a continuing monitoring plan that we have to do of the trees. So all of the trees that we promised to keep are getting monitored for the next 5 years, and if they die, we have to replace the caliper size equivalent, things like that.
Which is very hard to do. Because yeah. There's not a lot of, already had to replace a lot, and it was hard to find the locations on the site, you know, that were appropriate for the trees, for new trees.
Yeah, and, yeah. Well, the monitoring plan, as far as I understand it as a civil engineer, that all we're doing for the monitoring plan is drafting the changes when a tree dies. We delete it from the... Every one of these things we created an O&M plan for, with how to maintain them, what to look for to see if it's plugging or not. For the pocket swales, for instance, if water is seen ponding for so many hours after the last time it rains, then it's obviously not working. It's clogged somewhere, probably the surface. So we recommended that the first thing you should do is try to determine if it is just the surface, the top layer, because that's the most common clogging point, is just the first couple inches. If you remove that and it drains well, we'll just replace that top piece. But we found some that the soil seems to drain well, and it's something lower down, like the filter fabric that separates the growing medium from the underdrain. That's clogged, so some of those require more work. And I have a slide later, but erosion control for all of these green features, not just the pervious pavement, is a huge deal. And since we have dry wells that are susceptible to getting silted up and not working, it's really important not to ruin them during construction. But we had to drain the site somehow during construction, so that is a real challenge. And I think I have a slide. I'll talk about that in a second. Anything else? Well, a lot of those vegetated features are actually owned by this BES now. But it's, I think, people's hope that because they're not, there's not a large, not a great area draining to them, and these streets are not highly trafficked streets, that the contamination loads will not be that high, and so that the plants will be able to keep up with the contamination. I think a good indicator is if you're not getting plants to grow, they seem to be dying, then there's probably contamination issues. But that's a real hole in all of this green street design, is the maintenance and long-term monitoring aspect of it. And I think we'll get to the point where BES will have to have a real department to audit these kind of things, or go through and maintain them. Especially, they'll have to maintain their own, and then they'll have to make sure that the private ones are working as well. And yeah, they're not there yet. But I could be wrong about that. Right, Paul? Well, securing your champions to pull this off, it was really helpful to have people inside the city that were wanting to do this. And then they could work with the other departments, like PDOT, to go, okay, you can't have all the street parking because we have to have a compromise for treatment, things like that. And then being flexible with the design solutions can really help out, you know, having something that can work around trees, different things, what to do in those kind of scenarios. Lessons learned.